everyone, welcome to Smart Boss Social Minds Podcast. This is episode 19. It is the 5th of December 2020, and in today's episode I chat with Damien Culhane, who is a self-sabotage coach. We dive into a little bit about Damien's background, how he came across the concept of self-sabotage. We'll be explaining more about that, and how, you know, Damien has managed to help many, many people with what he does and find his true purpose in his own life. We'll be getting a lot of amazing, amazing information from Damien. I hope you enjoy the content. Welcome to Smart Boss Social Minds Podcast. This is episode 19, and I have a wonderful guest with me here today. His name is Damien Culhane, and he is a self-sabotage coach. So, Damien, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How has everything been going since the last time you spoke?
Well, thanks, Alicia. Thanks for the invitation, and nice to be here to share some insights with you. What I've been up to since the last time we spoke is really just focusing in on my own podcast, which is the Self-Sabotage Show, and inviting the interesting guests to talk about their experience of sabotage, which is really about how they end up with detaching from things that are really important to them and sabotaging them. So something that they desire that they either push away, reject, or don't achieve, and they are unconscious of why that happens. So that's the kind of real work I do with my clients. I've also been doing quite a lot of virtual training online with groups of people from around the world, where we do sessions, and we do it all on virtual training now. So I've been enjoying adapting my content to that, and enjoying the sunshine in Sardinia, which is nice because it's sunny again today.
I'm so envious because it's literally raining and really dark here today. So, and Sardinia is beautiful. So that's wonderful. Everything's been going great for you. So obviously you just touched briefly on what self-sabotage is. But for those listeners who, have never, heard of self-sabotage, because to be honest, I've heard of it. I know a bit about it, but not too much. Do you just want to dive into kind of, really where self-sabotage comes from, how to kind of identify it, and, the things that people can do to kind of tackle it, address it, and perhaps overcome it?
Wow, yeah, no problem. So it's probably best if I share a story with you, because if I give you a personal example, then it kind of makes it a bit more real for people.
Sure.
As a young kid, I was dealing with different emotions and dealing with the separation of my parents, for example, when I was only 7. And one of the ways that I dealt with that was by emotional eating. So I would eat too much and I would consume a lot of junk food, for example. And I just carried on doing that. So I just kind of slipped into that pattern a little bit. And unconsciously, I was really dealing with my emotions and dealing with the thoughts that I was experiencing by turning to something which is what I would call a dysfunctional behavior. So although I didn't know that at the age of 7, and I didn't really understand that when I was a teenager, I had this dysfunctional way of coping, which was leaning into junk food. So I would do it often in private, I would do it in secret, but I was very addicted to junk food. And that lasted for a very long time into my adult life. And it's really how we deal with those thoughts and emotions and those beliefs around ourselves that really govern how we respond. And so if we're responding with a sadness or a fear, like a worry or an anxiety, or we're responding with anger or frustration about something, it normally means that we're not then connected to what we truly want to create and something that we want to really deliver and would love to create in the world and to be the best version of ourselves. We can't be the best versions of ourselves if we're angry, sad, or we're worrying. So when somebody experiences sabotage, it normally means that the anger or the the worry or stress or the fear or the sadness has taken over. And so there often are, it's a reptilian response that happens inside the core of our brain, and like the root of our brain is not particularly sophisticated. It responds in a very quick way in 13 milliseconds. So it's like really, really fast. We can't really control it. So from that perspective, we are responding to certain situations that happen around us, and we often respond with a thought or an emotion that is then going to detach us from what we are truly all about. So if you take lockdown as a great example, you know, we've all experienced it, right? Whatever country you're in right now, you've probably had some form of, you know, control or lockdown or worry about your health or your family's health or where the food and water is going to come from, you know, all those types of things. And what happens is your fear response gets triggered. So when the lockdown happens and you're in the middle of a global pandemic, you immediately start to worry and get stressed and anxious about what's going to happen. And so you close in and you can't possibly step back and see actually the bigger picture, which is, do I really need to be concerned right now about my health, about my family's health, about the long-term future? So you lose sight of what you can create, you lose sight of what's available to you. And so little things start to frustrate you, people around you, because you're in close proximity to them, you start to see the kind of niggles that really irritate you, that wind you up or upset you in some way, because you can't detach yourself from that fear response and that anxiety, which is in every cell of your body. And so it's really important to kind of understand that about yourself, because when you can start to have more awareness to how you're dealing with situations like that, you can then start to control how you're going to respond. So it's about a mental fitness. It's about pivoting the way that you think so that you can then change your thought process and you can change your response in any given moment. So I hope that answers all of your questions.
Wow, yes. You covered so much there. That definitely, you know, kind of gives us a much better understanding of self-sabotage. So it's almost like a detachment, and you help people to address that, recognize that, and then kind of bring them back in. So would you say that self-sabotage is, you know, when you talk about self-sabotage, is it like the kind of like the negative voice that we get inside of us that is kind of telling us we're not good enough or that kind of thing? Is that what self-sabotage is?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's an unconscious response, and we have this unconscious part of our brain, which basically is this reptilian kind of autopilot. You know, it's just, and it is the inner voice. So the inner voice happens within 13 milliseconds. So, you know, if you see something, you're going to respond with a thought that takes 13 milliseconds to actually manifest. So you've automatically, like almost immediately, you're going to go to a response. The typical way that we would respond is from a key saboteur, which is the judge. So the judge is looking at yourself. Oh yeah, you always do this. Look at you doing it again. You know, like that critical voice, that inner critic. Often that comes from, you know, suppression as a child or from an adult figure who was very dominant or a teacher that might have been overbearing. And so you hear these voices that are typically, you know, telling you you're not good enough or telling you that you're not worthy or whatever it might be. So that's the immediate response. And that's the key saboteur that we have, the judge. And then there are nine other accomplice saboteurs. So for example, with mine, the second one is pleaser. So I come from a place of wanting to help other people, which is probably why I'm a coach, right? So it's about that kind of desire to serve others and contribute something and make a difference. But the sabotaging thoughts are that underneath all of that, my belief is I'm not worthy. So therefore, I'm trying to help people because I don't feel worthy of getting help or of receiving it. So I then don't get my own needs met, which means I then become frustrated because I'm doing things for other people, but my own needs aren't being met and they're not showing appreciation maybe for what I'm doing. So this is how the sabotaging thought comes about. You're doing things thinking, oh, you know, I'm doing things to serve everyone else and I'm great. I'm doing things to help others and I feel so good about it. But then you sit down and go, yeah, but they're really ungrateful, or, you know, why am I so unhappy when I'm helping other people? It doesn't make sense. So you really need to understand all of those different aspects of your unconscious behavior and the unconscious inner voices, of which there are at least 10, And if you're inside some of my clients' heads and some of my head from the past, you've probably got more than 10, but, you know, there's that inner monkey, if you like, the kind of chattering away. And the idea is to understand why it happened, why it's programmed the way it is, to have awareness to when it happens, what triggers it, and then to be conscious enough to be present to quieten that voice and neutralize it, to then tap into a different level using mental fitness, a different level of consciousness to really understand how you can solve problems, how you can empathize with people, how you can navigate new situations, how you can innovate, and how you can really create something beautiful in your life.
Wow, that is incredible. And you're obviously so passionate about what you do. And it's really, you know, amazing that you live your life. You were able to kind of overcome all of your challenges through, you know, self-teaching yourself, researching all this stuff and finding out about self-sabotage and, you know, using that to overcome the obstacles in your life. It's really fascinating. So, you know, you went through self-sabotage, you went through this kind of dark phase in your life, you were able to overcome it. So from that moment, what then, like, how did you then become a self-sabotage coach? Like, how did you make that leap?
Oh, great. I am very passionate about this. And I think the key thing is I got to the lowest point in my life where not only was I overeating, I was drinking too much, I was binge drinking till I passed out. I had other addictions that were really unhealthy and making very poor choices. So I kind of reached a dead end with all of that, of the addictions. And then in the end, I had become addicted to my own sadness. So I was wallowing in that self-pity of, you know, isn't my life crap? And I've created it. It was my choice to make certain things and to make certain choices and decisions. And that had resulted in a lot of my sadness that I'd created. So when I sat with that, it was like, okay, well, there's only one person who's responsible to sort this out. That's me. And I needed to go deep inside, as you'd said. So I went on that journey of discovery and really understanding myself. And it took a period of time to be able to do that. And it was about shedding the mask and getting rid of the identity, not necessarily getting rid of it, but understanding the identity that I'd created, so that I could then start from scratch and clear a space for actually who am I and what do I represent and what are my values and what do I want to create in the world and you know, why am I here, to that kind of existential stuff, and really started to rebuild from that moment. And so the journey was all about understanding the unconscious behavior, the unconscious pattern of sabotage. Everybody has it. We have typically between 18 and 25 steps in our pattern of sabotage. We're unconscious to it, so you can't do this on your own. It's not work that you can do on your own. You do need to work with people who understand it and understand how to read your pattern. It's a very intuitive process. Once you have that, it's a very enlightening personal growth moment, because you suddenly get the release of, oh my God, yeah, when I look at all of the stuff I've sabotaged and all the things that I've been doing, underlying all of it is an emotional wound. This is what Carl Jung refers to as an emotional wound, that you formula that is created from the age of 0 to 7, where you've got an unmet need, or you've got a lack of recognition, or a lack of love, or whatever it might be that you identify and attach yourself to. So for me, when I discovered that my motivation and purpose of my pattern of sabotage was that I cannot be loved, and I was trying to avoid receiving love, it made so much sense. It's emotionally, it's a horrific place to be, because you just realize what a mess you've created of relationships, and you know how that's played out in other areas of your life. But when you look at the underlying thread of it, and you realize that you come from that place of, you know, cannot be loved, you realize the mistakes you made, and you start to regret that. But you can't be defined by your past, so you have to create the future based on the fact that you don't want to be defined by that any longer. So when I create situations like an end result or a goal I'm going for, if it feels like I'm going to end up with a cannot be loved type of energy, I know that I'm in my pattern. I've got anger, or I've got sadness or fear coming up. I know that I'm going to be in my unconscious pattern, and it's going to end up with cannot be loved. So I shift my energy and say, what would I love right now? What am I trying to achieve? What's my end result? And I'm focusing on that, that's aligned with my heart, which is aligned with my vision. And I got that so powerfully from an immense amount of personal growth, but also I was doing what's called an activation ceremony, I suppose you'd call it. This is in Croatia last year in 2019. And I was in a park with about 85 guys, and we were doing this kind of tribal warrior thing, you know, like chanting and getting really into our masculine power. But then you absorb that into a very feminine energy through deep breathing and through, you know, kind of understanding how your body can integrate that power. So you take that masculine energy and then you put it through a feminine energy of being calmer and relaxed and being more conscious. And you then get in contact with what your heart wants. So you're not locked out of that. And so what was obvious was that it came screaming out of me that I wanted to heal suffering. So it was natural for me to then move into the self-sabotage coaching, which is healing people's emotional suffering. It's helping them to alleviate their psychological pain. It's helping them with their emotional wound. And that's what the self-sabotage recovery program is, which is what I work on with my clients one to one.
Wow. So it really sounds like you have found your true purpose in life and you are living that every single day. And that is really, really admirable. And it's, you know, probably the one thing that everybody is searching for. They're searching for their purpose in life. No, I really feel like I can get a lot of information regarding purpose from you, because you are literally the living, breathing example of that. So if somebody, you know, there are a lot of entrepreneurs who probably listen to this podcast because, you know, it's an entrepreneur podcast. And I know just from experience that there are so many entrepreneurs who are still to this day, including myself, searching for that one thing that they know that they're put on this earth to do. So what would be the first steps in, you know, trying to identify that? Is that a lot of inner work? Is it like consistently working on yourself? Is there like a time frame, or what can people do if they want to go in the direction of really finding out why they're here?
So the simple answer is to work with me for 2 hours and I'll tell you. No, there are things that you can do. So the key things for me are, there's a kind of natural sweet spot, which is, firstly, really identify what your key skills and strengths are. So what are you really good at? What are you known for? What are your attributes? What do other people recognize you for? So there'll be a kind of list of the key strengths that you have, the key things that you know that you're good at, that you're natural at. You know, you have natural ability to be able to do. So for me, it's about interpersonal skills. It's about listening. It's about understanding, compassion, empathy. All of those things are things that I know that I'm good at and that I've been recognized for. So there'll be a whole list of things that you can identify as key strengths. So that's a really good starting place. And that can take, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to sort of figure that out and really go deep into, you know, what do your family think of your strengths? What would your teachers or what would your bosses say from the past? You know, how have they described you? What are the things that you can remember that are key strengths? So that's the first thing. The second thing is to really look at, what do you enjoy doing? What do you have fun with? What things really, you know, light you up and do you get pleasure from? So it might be that it's a hobby, or it might be something like where you're concentrating and in flow and you can lose track of time. They're the sorts of things that we love to do. So it might be some kind of creative thing, or it might be something around writing, or when you're designing something, you know, anything like that, that you can lose yourself and get into flow. It's often something that we're doing around an activity that we have an ability to do. So we've got skills and strengths, and now we have fun doing something that we can apply those skills and strengths. Or it might be just spending time with the right people and chilling out in nature, or going for walks with the family or with the dog or whatever it might be. So there's things that we love to do. So that's the second thing. And the third thing then is really around, what are your values? What are the things that are really important to you? What are your, if you like, what's on your list and what's not on your list? So for the majority of people, they often, when we do the values exercise, often they'll come up with, you know, something around truth, integrity, honesty. That is often very key for people, because they want to ensure that they're being treated with respect, they are showing respect for people, and they can have that honesty and integrity in a relationship. So often that would be a key one. But there's other things such as, for me, compassion, such as, you know, making a difference and contribution. These are values for me that I align with. So when you understand your strengths, you understand what you'll enjoy doing, and you understand what your values are, the sweet spot that's right in the middle of all of those three is what you should be doing. That's what will make a difference to the universe, because you love doing it, you're good at it, and it aligns with your values and aligns with who you are. That's what the universe needs you to be doing, that sweet spot in the middle. Now, the worst thing is that because of our social conditioning and because of our upbringings and because of, you know, the way that our kind of belief structure is organized, we often think that, you know, we must be in a very highly paid job, we must be well qualified, we must be making a lot of money and providing. And of course, that's important. And in business, you've got to be able to make money to survive, because we're not registered charities, we're limited companies and sole traders and self-employed, and we need to support ourselves and our families. So we've got to find something that's commercially viable. So then we start to lean into that a little bit and look at the reality of, okay, well, does the world really need, you know, somebody who is an expert in stained glass windows? Well, yes, somewhere there is a need for someone who is an expert in stained glass windows. Can you sustain a viable business from that? Possibly, but your market is going to be very small and your expertise is going to be something that those people really need. So you've got the opportunity to then look at, well, I can charge a lot of money for what I do because there's a real need for it in this particular market. So you get much more definition around where your marketplace is and much more defined around who your key target avatar is, if you like. Words that you're probably familiar with and hopefully most business owners understand. But you get much clearer on your message and much clearer about who you're targeting your messages at. So I think it's important to not only align from the universal perspective of the universe needs you to take responsibility to show up and be the best version of yourself. It's also actually commercially, can I make that work? Is that something the universe really needs and people want to pay for?
Wow, that is a superb answer. You just cleared that up so well. Thank you so much for sharing that. It really, yeah, thank you so much. That was amazing. Obviously you are an incredible human being. You're living out your purpose. You know, you are trying to reach out to as many people as possible to help them. And, you know, for anyone listening, I highly recommend Damien, you know, to work with Damien. I've worked with him in the past. He's an incredible human being. And there's no doubt that you are an amazing self-sabotage coach. But obviously, you know, everyone who's building a business, they face some challenges somewhere down the line. Could you tell me, you know, kind of what challenges you perhaps face when you start building your business, or perhaps, you know, challenges that you're currently facing when looking at the business side of things?
Thank you. Yes, great question. Thank you for your lovely compliments, by the way. I think the key thing for me has always been around wanting to do things myself, but not having the expertise and knowledge to be able to deliver on it. So, for example, you know, you take something like a recorded podcast and you look at the video content. I would love to be able to quickly and easily extract 2 minutes of that to then share on social media so that people know about the work I do and are interested to come and have a look at a bit more. But for me to, you know, figure that out, go and spend time to do it and find the technology that works and upload it and edit it and all of that stuff is very time consuming. And the more I do that, the less I'm coaching and the less I'm working one-to-one with my clients. So I guess it's just kind of really getting that balance, because I can't have somebody interacting with the audience that I'm creating or my community who either isn't me or doesn't understand my message. And therefore, I need to really kind of look at how I engage with my audience and how I use that. So in the past, for example, I've used organizations that do a kind of done for you service where they help me to publish a book and they help me to develop some videos and put that online. And that was really beneficial, but then I didn't follow through enough on it. So although I did it in initial kind of flow and initial success, I didn't then continue that or sustain that. So I guess the key thing is about understanding what works and what structure works for you and then doing more of that. So I think when I first started, I definitely lacked structure and I was a bit kind of all over the place with it and didn't really know my direction, didn't really understand what my key message was. So I kind of fumbled around a little bit, I guess is the way I'm thinking of it, kind of didn't have a lot of clarity. But now I've got much more clarity, I've got much more direction, you know, I know what I want to do, I know how I can make a difference, it aligns with my values, my clients get a great deal of value from it, I get fantastic testimonials and I know that I'm on the right path. Now I just want to do more of that. So that's what my kind of focus is, I guess.
Awesome. So would you say that, you know, it's all about trial and error and just working out for each person what works for them?
Yeah, totally. When I started my coaching business 15 years ago, I started out in work-life balance and I was a trained and qualified life coach, fairly fresh. And I soon figured that actually work-life balance isn't necessarily what everyone wanted 15 years ago. So although I thought it was a great idea, it wasn't something that people really, really were looking for. Some people, yes, but not a great deal. And a lot of my experience was in the corporate business because I'd had I've been working in organizations that were recognized as being blue chip organizations like PepsiCo, like a big match manufacturer, part Swedish Match, big American companies like Staples. You know, I had responsible positions that were kind of managerial and director level responsibility. So a lot of my background was in corporate, and corporates wanted me to come in and to be able to train their teams in how to think differently. So that was something that the corporates needed, and it wasn't something that I was necessarily wanting to do, but because there was a need there, I would fulfill that need, and I was doing that for quite a long period of time, and still do actually, but it's not my main driving force, it's not my main purpose. So it probably took me a couple of years to get through that because it's very lucrative work. It's very rewarding in terms of financially, commercially, but it doesn't fulfill me and my purpose. So it's like a kind of mismatch and a misalignment. So it's more important for me to be aligned with what my heart wants and what I can do to make a difference than to, you know, really make a commercial success. But of course, it's important to have the lifestyle that I like and enjoy and have the resources that I need. But, you know, I'm happy with making a difference in the way that I do.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. So what about COVID? How did, you know, COVID-19 affect your business and your life and, you know, your business and life? And, you know, what have you done to, or if you have done to kind of innovate and change things up in order to kind of address that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the key thing was that with the bigger organizations that I've been doing training for, you know, since about 2007, actually, a lot of them have taken their training online because they wanted to get to their audience, which was global. So, you know, people in India, people in Asia, people in America, people in across the EU, and to be able to deliver training to those people, it became obvious the technology was catching up and was getting better. So when coronavirus hit and the lockdown hit, I'd already been using Zoom and delivering online courses for probably about 2 years or longer. So we'd already got a kind of format that was working. But what happened was, I think suddenly the technology became really accessible and everyone started to use it. So much as we've been using Skype or suddenly more people are using it, like tens of millions, not just a few million, tens of millions every day are using these video conferencing facilities. So it becomes much more natural when I'm then talking to my clients and saying, yes, we can do some one-to-one coaching and it's going to be over Zoom, they're a lot less resistant to that. Because 2 or 3 years ago, if I'd have said that, they'd say, oh no, I want face-to-face. Now, of course, with social distancing and with the various aspects of, you know, the way we live our lives, actually face-to-face becomes a complex problem. Because first of all, you've got to find somewhere to meet and that can be challenging. And when you do meet, you've got to say, well, are we going to wear masks? Are we going to, you know, be in a cafe? You know,
and it's quite personal as well, isn't it?
It's very personal, right? Yeah. You don't want to be sitting 2 meters apart and shouting in a cafe, you know, because it's a personal topic. Yeah. So actually, it lends itself really nicely to the this format. So it's become a lot more acceptable to use this format. So that's become a lot easier. What I have done is taken more of my content that was the intellectual property I own around transferring skills and the kind of traditional workshops that I would have run, and I'm converting that into online content so that people can consume that online in a digital kind of, you know, through videos and through online learning platforms. So that shifted for me. On a personal level, I was actually in Poland when the lockdown happened, so I was in a foreign country at the time. And my immediate response was complete and utter fear and like survival. So I was thinking, you know, where's the nearest power station? How are we going to get there if there's nobody alive to keep the power station going? Where are we going to get electricity? Where's the water? You know, what happens if the water treatment is switched off and can't be run? Where are we going to get fresh water from? You know, so I went into this kind of panic mode. I was standing in the supermarket, like filling my basket up with pasta and, you know, all sorts of stuff, you know? And I was just like, hang on a minute. Actually, the shops are still going to be open. The water comes actually from a fresh source where I was living. It actually comes from the mountain. So it's a spring. So there was no problem with water. And the power stations, they're essential for people. So they were going to carry on continuing to open. And when you look at the fatality rate, you look at the infection rates and, you know, what happens with the condition, actually, when you dig deep inside of it, it's actually, you know, not, I don't want to underplay it or undermine it, but it's not as serious as we might make out that it is. You know, the media make it much bigger. The government makes it much more serious. When you look inside of it, actually, of course, it is dangerous to certain members of the community and certain age groups and certain people that are very vulnerable. My own son, who's disabled, he is a vulnerable person who has to be shielded, because if he gets some condition on his lungs, for example, he's not strong enough to be able to fight that. So we have to respect the fact that there are certain people who are going to be very vulnerable. But when you step back and actually start to look at how can I make a difference in the world, I can still continue to do that despite the fact that there's a global epidemic going on, and I can still create a life I love. It just needs to be maybe a little bit different to how I originally planned it. So we just adapt to it and get on with our lives and focus on that.
So absolutely. I totally agree with you. I think, you know, we have to, well, the government has to put these necessary precautions in place to protect vulnerable people. And, you know, I think it's just, as you said, it seems like a bigger problem than it is, simply because we've had to change our reality and the way we live. So I totally agree with you there. And I'm really happy that, you know, you've had some positive outcomes for your business, such as, you know, being able to do your, you know, your meetings online and everything like that. So that's amazing. So finally, I just want to ask you, what are, you know, the best things about owning your own business, being an entrepreneur, and essentially being a self-sabotage coach?
So I think the main thing about being an entrepreneur and your own boss is the flexibility and freedom. Because, you know, for me, I live in Italy now, I'm living in Sardinia. You know, I can start work a little bit later, which means I can go to the beach in the morning when I choose to. It means that if I want to take an afternoon and have a siesta, I'll do that. So I can be a little bit more flexible. Whereas if I was working for an organization that were constantly, you know, filling my diary up with meetings, etc., and I had less control and less flexibility, then I think that would be much harder. Of course, you can still find ways of doing that and making that happen. But I think the freedom of being able to make your own decisions, of having the flexibility of when you work and where you work and how you work, I think is key, and who you work with is a kind of key in an organization, a large PLC, a big blue chip company. I was a director of the business, and I was being asked to make decisions that didn't align with my integrity, didn't align with my values. We were losing a contract to a competitor. And as part of that, we had to transfer a number of people from our payroll onto this new company, onto one of our competitors, onto their contract. So they'd won the contract from us. And the person I was working for, the senior director above me, had asked me to take anyone who was on any kind of disciplinary or anyone who was on long-term sickness or who was underperforming, and to put them onto that contract so that they transferred out into a different organization. Now, that totally misaligned with me, because my belief is that, you know, you work with somebody to develop them, you work with somebody who's facing challenges, you help them to overcome those, you train them. Of course, if there's underperformance, you need to deal with that, but you certainly don't do it in a Machiavellian underhand way by passing them off to somebody else. And so that really misaligned with me. And so running my own business, I can make decisions that are more aligned with my values. And maybe those choices are not always based on, you know, commercial or on shareholders, because I've only got myself to really think about and the people that work with me. So if I want to choose to do some voluntary work, for example, I'll go and choose to do that. If I choose to charge a charity less than what my commercial rate is because I want to make a difference to them, I can make that decision. So I don't have to check with anyone. Now, someone might say that actually you need that accountability, and I have accountability structures, and I have relationships with couple of people who where I'm in accountability buddying relationships with them, and I'm in mastermind groups, etc. So I've always got people that I bounce ideas off, and people to support me in what I do, and to have a structure of checking up on me, if you like, or that I can bounce ideas off. So I do think there's a degree of that independence of being able to make your own decisions. But also, I think what is important is having some kind of accountability with a structure that works for you, of having somebody that holds you accountable. So I'm a non-exec director for family businesses, and I work with boards of directors, holding them accountable, actually, to say, well, this is what you said you were going to do. You know, you're not achieving that. Let's go back and review. So I do strategic reviews with them. I facilitate board meetings. I'm the non-family member in the board. And that means that there's less emotion around in the family because they've got someone else in the room. So that works quite well as a non-exec kind of role. So I enjoy that aspect of what I do as well.
Wow, that's incredible advice. I think obviously two minds are better than one, and even more minds are always better than one. So yeah, that's amazing advice. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It is amazing. It has been amazing. You've shared so much value. Can you let the listeners know if they want to get hold of you, how can they follow your journey and kind of consume more of your content?
Sure, thank you. One of the ways is to go to any of the podcast providers, and you can access the Self-Sabotage Show, which is the podcast which I run. Generally, we've got weekly episodes coming out. I've got some amazing guests who I interview, people with very diverse backgrounds and from, you know, different perspectives of how sabotage has affected them, from, you know, overeating to alcohol, to drugs, to homelessness, to you name it. I've got all sorts of people who have been on. So it's an amazing guest. And each of them share insights into how to overcome it. So hopefully you can get great value from that, just listening to that. My main website is my name. So it's damiancolhane.co.uk. And they can access my content there. And there's lots of information available. And keep an eye on social media. If people, again, type in my name and follow me on Instagram or Facebook, I do post quite a lot of content there, either on video or articles and other things that they can see and find out more about how they can deal with sabotage, more importantly, how to overcome it. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Damian. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. I wish you the best for the rest of the year and the years ahead. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alicia. You take care. Cheers.
Take care. Bye.